we've already had such a rich and joyful morning. We've already had the experience of fullness. And I think that because the feeling of not fullness is so familiar to us, that part of our mindfulness living can be occasionally to notice what fullness is. Now, you don't need to step outside fullness to feel the fullness. You don't need to detach from it or become self-conscious in any way whatsoever, but just to be even more full in the fullness. And the parallel would be when I have been inviting you during our times of more formal meditation to sink more consciously into the holding that is already happening. Your chair is holding you, whether you're aware of it or not. The floor is holding you, whether you are aware of it or not. Your life experiences are holding you, whether you're conscious of that or not. I'm inclined to the view, as you now well know, that you are also being held on the unseen plane, whether you are conscious of it or would welcome it or not. Yeah? So in the same way that becoming conscious of being held is in some real way repairing. There's a beautiful quotation from Catherine Mansfield, which I used. I sort of made a prayer of it in Heaven on Earth, but you don't need to call it a prayer, where she says, "If my suffering is not repairing, I will make it so." And that was a very strong statement, because her suffering was so dreadful. Catherine Mansfield is probably still one of the greatest writers in the English language, and was particularly honoured in New Zealand, though not honoured enough, because she grew up here and became a young adult here. And some of her most moving stories are set in Wellington on Tenekori Road. I mean, you can never go to Tenekori Road and not think of Keziah, after whom I named my daughter. My daughter's named Keziah Catherine. So that was a profound statement, because at a very young age she was dying of tuberculosis. And she knew it. And she was at the time transforming the short story in English. I think she's as good as Chekhov. Others do too. So for her, that was a very brave statement. If suffering is not a repairing process, I will make it so. Okay. So we need to notice sometimes that we are held, even in our suffering, and that we are full, even in our times of not fullness. You know, one of the wonderful trainings that knowledge gives us, spiritual knowledge as opposed to information, is that we can embrace the contradictions. We can be full and not full, perfect and not perfect. Yeah. I want you to just think about that. It's not like a koan, but it's a truth. All of those states of mind are coexistent. We think we're flipping from one to the other. Actually, we're just landing, but they're all there. And in a way, what a relief, because where we land somewhere uncomfortable is also impermanent. isn't it? Heaven can't get any better than this. Heaven can't get any better than this. Heaven can't get any better than this. And it's all true. And it's all true. Yeah? I want to read you a very short passage that I wrote for you. And it's on the bottom of one of your pages. And it's under the beautiful passage that I took from Malala Yousafzai, who's the Nobel Prize winning girl, who's going to be one of the great peace leaders and teachers of nonviolence of our time. Among the things that I've quoted for you are, extremists have shown what frightens them most, a girl with a book. A girl with a book. So underneath it, I wrote a message for you, and it is this. Not just in relation to Malala. In relation to all our peacekeepers of the heart, of the mind, of the body, of the soul, of the earth. And we are among them. This is the calling of our time. To choose to be peacekeepers. And, moreover, to choose to be peace creators. It's not enough to keep the peace. We must also be it. So here was a short message that I wrote in that moment of preparation to be with you. And on the physical plane, I'm preparing now not to be with you. But it's all one. And there's sadness in it. There's loss in it. We love the physical presence too, don't we? We do. We love it. We can feel lonely without it. That's true. So I wrote, and you got this note from me on your notes. We must strive with all our power and intelligence and love for God and humanity to abolish violence of any kind. Perhaps especially in our personal conduct with one another or in clinging to habits that debase others or ourselves, or threaten the earth on which we all depend. That's very big. We need to grow up for this. Every act of violence reduces us all. Every act of peacemaking and compassion increases our safety, joy and happiness. You have this, all of you, on the sheet, where reminders of peace on one side and then Mahatma and Malala and then my little thing here, which is a little thing hiding inside a very big thing. We must speak up for the voiceless. That is the calling of our time. We are so privileged, each of us, to have a voice. Now, how we do that is in our own way. But every spiritual teacher that we know about has spoken up, not for the powerful, for the voiceless. And within the Christian culture, which is so familiar to us, it's a kind of tragedy that the speaking up is so often against what is actually trivial, except to the people who suffer from it. And that same power and energy is not brought to speaking up for those who are considered to be on the margins or beyond them. This was absolutely what Christ did. It was one of the things that put all those in authority totally offside. And if you look in the scriptures, in the Christian scriptures, in the stories, which I think are even more telling than other people's commentary on them, who is the person brought into the heart of the story is always someone who others would have chosen to overlook or would have been the object of their disgust or their misunderstanding or their contempt or their ignorance. I think we can take everything from that as a lesson in our own conduct. Who are we bringing in and who are we leaving out? And this also applies even with great sensitivity and subtlety to those parts of ourselves, those parts of ourselves that we marginalize or exile. Bring them in. Sit them down. Serve them living water. Ask them what they need. Let them rest. Make peace with them. You know, we all have those sorrows. We have those things that we're terribly ashamed of, or we regret, or that remind us too vigorously of our complex human condition. Welcome them. Welcome them. Welcome them. They are your teachers of humility. And then in that, also notice how your judgments of others can soften and take in what really matters and be less dazzled by what is pretty temporary. What really matters are those multiplying acts of understanding and delight in who we are. And compassion for who we are. Compassion also for who we are. Yeah. We're all adventurers. We're discovering. We are discovering. We are evolving. We are evolving. So, I had said we must speak up for the voiceless. And some of us are very privileged to have a public voice that doesn't make the more private voices any less vital. On the contrary. And those voices that regard themselves as private, well, we know. My lifetime of social activism and political activism as well as spiritual activism, it's all the same in just different cloak, we know that actually when many whispers come together, it's quite a strain. When many voiceless come together, it's quite a voice. Isn't it? We can change things for the better in our world and in ourselves, can't we? We have to believe it. We have to believe that every soul who comes into this world is as deserving of peace and all that flows from it. Safety, trust, well-being, wellness, never mind love and happiness. Every soul is deserving of this. think daily and on some days hourly of those millions of children in our world who have had no experiences yet of safety from the outside. The consequences of this for our whole human family are earth-shaking. Unless we learn, we know this, I'm analytically trained, and if there was some of it I don't need any longer, but I know this, if we don't experience some safety from the outside, it's very hard. We have to struggle with all our consciousness and with all the help that we can get from others to create safety on the inside. And when there's no safety on the inside, we'll project it outwards. That we live in a world that is called intelligent, where seriously well-educated people can actually believe that this is not catastrophic for the future, is going to be one of the great delusions of our human family. We have to keep the children in our world safe. It is as vital for them as clean water, where we also have far to go. We're making progress with clean water. We are going backwards with safety. Safety of home, safety of country, safety of the way that the world thinks about you. Yeah? Yeah. We must speak and act for peace. We must speak and act for peace. We must cherish the earth. And we must save ourselves. We must save ourselves. I'm going to take this as my theme next year. What would it mean to save ourselves? It will be part of our theme. Every teaching I've given you, and you cannot save yourself without benefiting the world. You cannot act in peace for the world without saving yourself. Save yourselves from what? Well, most of all, from despair. From feeling that your life doesn't matter. From feeling that you are unentitled to joy. Or from disentitling yourself from happiness and connection and engagement and life. Back to Deuteronomy. Let heaven and earth witness this day. I have put before you blessings and curses, life and death. Choose life. Choose life. So that you and all those whom your lives touch can live. And some days that's enough. Some days it's enough. I choose life. Some days that would be a miracle of courage. I choose life. And I finish this little letter to you by saying, this is our spiritual practice. This is our spiritual practice to bring heaven to earth. Om Shanti.